No, no, I'm not going to have that. I'm not. Not this year. I'm looking at the chalkboard menu by the door of the diner. Today's special? Turkey smoothie. It's a diner tradition. I suppose they have it every year. They just take what's left over from the big feast. The turkey. Stuffing. Buns. Yams. Celery. Radish. A little pie for sweetness. Green beans. A splash of wine. Dump it all in a blender and tamp it down with a plunger and set it on puree and voila! Turkey smoothie. Thanksgiving in a glass. No. I tried it once. Brave soul that I am, just curious how bad it could be, and while it wasn't exactly the emetic that I had anticipated, it needed pepper. That's what I thought. I'm drinking a smoothie and I'm thinking, needs pepper. You ought not to think of pepper when drinking a smoothie. Smoothies and peppers are on different sides of the flavor continuum. So no, I won't be having that. Hi folks, welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilax. Sitting here at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern formica counter out at the old diner. On old Highway 23, about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be at this very, very moment. No, I'm just going to stick with coffee. Diner blend. Ooh, man, depilatory strength, too. I'm serious. You know, some coffee will put hair on your chest. This will take it off. I mean, if you were to pour this on a hirsute portion of your body, the follicles would just slough right off. I don't know if it's the heat or the acidic potency of it, but it's good. It's good. It's an odd time of the year, isn't it? I mean, here we are in the middle of the great smear of holidays. Hallow Thanksgiving-mas Eve Day, or whatever you wish to call it. But it doesn't feel like we're in the middle of the holiday smear. Thanksgiving seems like an awful long time ago. And that mood doesn't really stick with you, you know? Nobody walks around for 2 or 3 days afterwards full of the Thanksgiving spirit. Unless you ate a great deal, of course, and have some sort of abdominal impaction, and you know, then, yeah, it'll stick with you. But Christmas seems like an awful long time away, and New Year's Day? Why, that might as well be next year. Oh, there's a new joke. So, what do? We spend the week in limbo, waiting for Christmas to get its mittened claws around our heart and our head. Don't get me wrong, I love Christmas. I love Christmas songs. I just don't want to hear them now. That's why I'm glad I'm here at the diner. Some old ancient edict set forth by a manager now long dead, bless his heart, said that there should be nothing around the diner that says Christmas until December 1st. No boughs of holly, no cheaply printed Santa Claus faces from Ben Franklin, no carols on the jukebox, nothing. Nothing until December 1st. And that feels about right. Because there's no snow outside. It doesn't feel like Christmas at all. So we wait. We wait for the inevitable. Because Lord knows, soon enough we'll be hearing Steve and Edie singing about a sleigh ride 37 times a day. And that'll get us in the mood, won't it? That'll get us in the spirit. Actually, Christmas songs, only a select few of them really get me in the spirit. The ones that are about Christmas itself don't do it, because it's not Christmas. The ones that get me in the mood of anticipating Christmas, like Silver Bells, It's Christmas Time in the City, See the People Walking Around. I mean, that's a song about shopping downtown, essentially. That gets me in the mood. Less so, for example, Alvin and the Chipmunks saying that they want a hula hoop. Was that what it was? Is that what Alvin wants? I seem to remember something about me, I want a hula hoop being played 50 times a day when I was a kid. Anyway, sorry. The songs that anticipated get me in the mood, but the songs about the thing itself I tend to reserve for the day. So, here I am, in limbo. Doing what? Well, trying to sell a book. As you may have known, I have a book out called Gastro Anomalies. I wanted to call it The Gallery of Regrettable Food 2. That seemed to me that it would be an easier way to build on the success of Gallery of Regrettable Food 1. But no. Apparently there's some resistance in the publishing world to using the names of successful books to sell another book. I don't know why. You know, maybe Gallery of Regrettable Foods, A New Hope or something. That might have done it. Well, what are you going to do? Anyway, the name was chosen, and the book is out. And it's not like I'm recovering from having written it. Writing these things is not the difficult part. Good Lord, no. Writing is the easy part. Like most of the books, I wrote this one in 3 weeks or so. The hard work is the scanning. Oy, even collecting the images isn't that much of a problem. Granted, it took a long time to get the images. They came in from a variety of sources. People mailed me stuff, God bless them. I would go to stores and antique stores and root around for things to use. Here's an indication of how long it took actually to assemble all the material. A significant portion of one chapter was actually sent by somebody who underwent gender reassignment surgery, I believe, between the time that the material was tendered and the book was published, which, you know, makes the writing the acknowledgments rather difficult. I mean, nobody usually has to fact-check their acknowledgments, so I just kind of did a blanket one for everybody. But eventually, after a couple of years of collecting the stuff, I had enough for the second book and set to work writing it. And again, writing is the easy part. The hard part is the scanning. And for this one, I use the scanner that has seen me through 4 books and is now dead. It is now dead. Not that it quit. Not that it died. But it's dead to me, I guess is what I'm saying. It was an ancient, wheezy thing. I think Rumley Oil Pull was the name of the brand. And it would take forever to scan something at 600 dpi. And it would whine with every single pixel. And when you've had that sound, which is sort of like a chipmunk imitating a dentist's drill, when you've had that sound boring into your temples for a couple of weeks, you start to go mad. You start to go daft. To make things even worse, of course, after I've sent the book off to them, they will want to get some copies of pages themselves so they can scan them a little bit better. Now, previously, I've just shipped everybody the books. Here, you scan them. But for this one, I scanned it for them. The book came pre-scanned for their convenience. And they would ask me for a couple of pages from this book or that book or this book or that book. And I would have to go back and find them. And I had absolutely no system to this whatsoever. I renamed everything so many times that by the time I was done, something that started out being from Fun Foods for Fiesta Families ended up, you know, being shoved up in a chapter that had nothing to do with fun, food, fiesta, or families. And so I would spend a panicked afternoon on the floor, surrounded by tottering stacks of books, looking, paging desperately, looking for the loose picture that I had excised out with an X-Acto knife so I could send it to them. Now, I actually got one of these requests for some pictures before I went on a trip. A substantial trip, a 10-day trip out of town, actually. And I thought, well, I'll get to this when I get back. Took the letter with me, opened it up on the boat, and to my immense displeasure, found that they were missing about 60 pictures. 60 pictures. 60 pictures they wanted to rescan. Aye, and of course I wasn't going to be able to get it to them at all. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, you throw the letter off the boat, of course, and say you never got it. And then they make do with the pictures that they have, and the book comes out, and everybody's happy. I'm happy, and I hope you enjoy the book as well. Gastroanomaly is available from Random House, or at fine booksellers anywhere. Let us see what is on the jukebox, shall we? Because I'm pretty darn sure that there's nothing here that has to do with Christmas. However, it might be seasonal in a way that we cannot yet anticipate. Let us endeavor to find out. I'm going to go straight to the top and see what the mysterious man who fills the jukebox in the middle of the night has given us at the position of A. 1. You loved it as a sauce, you'll trust it as a song. Oh, great. Music for going blind, drinking homemade liquor.
I talk with a stranger, so sad and forlorn. His garments were
feckled.
All tattered and torn.
His garments were feckled? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
He told me a story. His heart went to heaven at the first fall of snow.
He on top of spaghetti,
a dear baby girl.
Oh no, she's not gonna die.
He loved every footstep. He loved every curve.
Don't you kill the little girl song.
But she went to heaven.
Oh, man.
Just 1 year. The angels came for her at the first fall of snow.
They looked like Child Protective Services, but I'm sure they were angels.
Still had the dolly that she used to love.
the afterlife is incorporeal, we will not be able to transfer physical objects into heaven. Read your theology. Well, duh!
His frail body trembled. He spoke soft and low. I'll be with my darling at first fall of snow.
No, suicide's a sin. You're gonna go to hell.
I just couldn't tell him how I felt inside. I patted his shoulder.
But you had a chauffeur? I'm sorry.
He smiled as we parted, 'cause he didn't know that we lost our darling at the first fall of snow.
Well, that's a day brightener. I imagine that was a really big hit in the country western stations when it first came out. People flooded the lines, asking for that one again. Could you play that song where the lady meets the poor guy in the feckled coat, and his daughter died, and then at the end turns out her daughter died too? I love that song. Matter of fact, if you play it twice, four kids die. I wonder what's on the flip side. I mistakenly hit my dog with a shovel. You know, then at the end of it, I don't know, turns out the dog was alive when he buried it. So in a sense, he killed the dog twice with a shovel. I don't know. Oh, bless him in his feckled coat. Oh, wait a minute. If the guy who stocks the jukebox knows the future, I think we've pretty much established that he does, because he's very prescient in his choices. Well, first of all, that explains why we had the first fall of snow there. It hasn't snowed yet. But it's going to snow, and then, you know, massive dying off of little girls, apparently. But it stands to reason he would have stocked the thing with food-related songs. To celebrate the book, of course. All right, well, let's just go at random here. I'm putting one hand over my eye so I don't see the title of the song. And go to D1.
Mama!
What the hell? Stop it! Everybody! Everybody knows that the bird is the word. Everybody knows that the bird is the word. Everybody knows that the bird is the word. Everybody knows that the bird is the word.
Because.
Auntie, brother, sister, mama, 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 mama,
it's
impossible to sing without getting an aneurysm. Whew. Well, chicken pot pie, that was food related. Gosh, I wonder who made the chicken pot pie for that singer. Oh, right. That would be his mother. There's got to be something else here that is gastro-anomaly themed. I'm sure there's a chicken pot pie somewhere back in my book. Don't ask me what's in my book. I just write them. I don't read them. Let's go to F2. It's Fonzie and the Dorkwads.
Well, we were standing on the sidewalk just admiring the view. And we thought that we would go downtown and find something to do. And we saw this place upon the corner and it looked real swell. So we opened the door and we went inside.
It stunk like the pits of hell.
Pizza. Hey, pizza.
Mama, 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 mama.
Well, I got a chick I really dig. I'm gonna love her all of my life. I'm gonna take her home and marry her and keep her for my wife. And when the people come and ask me the question, I'm gonna tell them why. Cause she stands in the kitchen and makes me one of those great big pizza pies.
So this is a relationship based on indentured servitude and the forced manufacture of circular ethnic foods. Got it.
Well, 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 the time went by and we had some kids and they're the apple of my eye. And they're growing big and strong and tall and their heads right up to the sky. Now some may wonder why they're so healthy. This is my reply. Cause they've been born and bred and always fed on great big pizza pies.
And their cholesterol is sky high. Yeah. Sky high.
Ready to die, but there's one request that I must make before I hit the sky, and that request is something no man in his right mind could not deny. Cause when they put me 6 feet under, I'm taking a great big pizza pie now, pizza. Hey, pizza pie.
What is it with people dying today and wanting to take things to heaven? I don't get it. First, it was the guy whose angel was taken by angels, I guess, and he wants to bring her Bratz doll up to heaven. And now this guy wants to die and have them actually put a pizza in the coffin. I don't think the song would have really done very well if they'd called it Pizza in the Coffin. Plus, if I had one item to choose to take with me to the afterworld, it wouldn't be pizza. Not even a deep dish from Geno's. No, sir. Plus, didn't the guy, like, age 50 years in the course of that song? It's a remarkable compression of a man's life, built solely around the leitmotif of pizza. Goes to the pizza shop, meets the girl. We assume they got married. I don't think he mentioned that. There's just, next thing we know, she's in the kitchen, presumably, you know, ankle shackled to a radiator or something, making him pizza pies. And then he'll periodically throw her down the linoleum because they had a couple of kids, and then they were all fed pizza because he's monomaniacal, man. He's got a one-track mind to this stuff. And then eventually he's about to die. And remarkably has the same doo-wop cheer about dying as he did entering a pizza restaurant at the beginning of the song. Well, at least the man had a theme. It's hard to look back on your life sometime and find a dominant theme. He had a theme. That theme was pizza. God help him if it was that Chef Boyardee kit stuff, too. That's a life wasted. All right, we got to find something else food-related here. We've had pizza, we've had chicken pot pie. What else might we have? Let's try M1.
No. No, 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 no. Anything but this. What? You don't know what this is? Listen.
Sometimes when I feel bad, my mom knows what to do. She says, I'll make a salad specially for you. Put in tomatoes, ham, and lettuce too. It's the salad I made for you.
Everybody.
I like eating salad. I like eating salad. I like eating salad. Thank you for the salad, mom.
That's the dreaded salad song from Yamaha Children's Music Program. It goes on forever. Small, strange, village of the damned Stepford boy thanking his mom for salad. I like eating salad. Salad always makes me feel good. This kid wants salad on his birthday, and he's backed up by a choir that seems to suggest this is a normal thing. It's not. Ugh. All right, I gotta go wash myself off from that. While I take a break, please lend an ear to these messages from our sponsors. Or what would be our sponsors, if we had any.
Can you figure it out? How's my family know when we're having Chef Boyardee spaghetti and meatballs?
Boyo Boyardee!
Boyo Boyardee! Boyo Boyardee!
Chef Boyardee. Great tasting spaghetti and delicious meatballs in a big zesty tomato sauce. Only 25 cents a serving. So your whole family will say,
Boyo Boyardee.
Chef Boyardee spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, boy.
Yum, yum, bumblebee, bumblebee, tuna. I love bumblebee, bumblebee, tuna. Yum, yum, bumblebee, bumblebee, tuna.
Somebody drank a turkey smoothie, or they didn't, or they did and they didn't, or they did and they wait. I don't know. Just somebody needs to go clean up.
James Levitt's back here with what seems to be a gastro anomalies themed diner. And how odd it should be that that should happen the very week that the book comes out. Well, the jukebox has been good to me tonight. The jukebox hasn't let me down. Let's see if I can find anything else here for last song, since I seem to be running out of time and I've got other stuff to do. I've got so much to do. When we finish here, I'll just order another cup of depilatory strength diner coffee and start off on the next task. I'm going to be here all night. Of course, you're welcome to be here all night as well. I'm always here. Just go down to the end of the long boomerang pattern for my counter, and there I will be.
Oh.
My accustomed place.
Oh, it's cold.
Well, one
oh,
over
it's
from my
so
place,
very cold.
But that's a long story.
Five
me.
Below
couple years ago,
and that's the high.
The things we've shared together, haven't we?
Coming
let's
in
just
car
into the diner.
To,
lost feeling in every single extremity. Let's look at C.
Loath to touch my earlobes lest they
okay,
crack
the
off.
Yeah, it's like living on empty. Well, no, it's empty.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Edmonds and Nick Lowe.
You can't stand on empty. Can you? Is it all gas? No, there's got to be an iron core down there somewhere. But it's mostly gas. You couldn't stand it. You landed on Neptune.
Hey, everybody, what you doing tonight?
You know, when I was a kid, reading comic books, like bad sci-fi comic books from DC or Charles and the rest, they postulated biped races on every possible planet in the solar system. 2 or 3 years from now, United Planetary System would always be the same thing. The Jovians, the Neptunians, the Uranians, and they all look like long, mechanical, bird, and fish. These ones are always not many Mercury, because I think the comic book makers have an extreme credibility amongst their audience. But, you know, if you were scientifically inclined, if you were given light sci-fi, you read this, you also probably read real books about science, and you would know that it was impossible for advanced civilizations to exist. Like, see, you can't really build an infrastructure, a city, a skyscraper, easily, when essentially everyone is falling heedlessly. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. Very cool. Very cool. I'm James Miles. Finally back at my trusty place. Highway. Parsecs. No, I'm sorry. I use parsecs. Distance. Time. Light years. Just kidding. You might want to add a couple though, because if you hadn't gotten a card, pick it up. I always make a mistake turning my car off and going to the house. Not thinking that I left my car on full blast.
Let's eat, but let's not eat
before we read the book, okay? There might be some problems.
Incredible.
It's like swimming.
Give yourself a couple of hours.
There's going to be
Arctic mare's ass.
I hope you do read the book. I
hope you buy it as well.
It's Gastro Anomalies by James Lalix, and you can pick it up at Amazon.com.
So, Barnes & Noble,
any bookstore,
you might want to plug in the card.
That's a
great Christmas present.
Guaranteed to spark joy.
No arguments and plenty of mirth.
When I was a kid, you always plugged in the car. Got cold, you plugged in the car.
That's it for today, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lalix.
This has been The Diner for Friday, November 30th. 2007.
There's a whole row down the road, electrical outlets
in December,
where people can snow in their cars.
And it's Christmas.
Built the place back.
All begin again.
Everyone would not only carry jumper cables, but they'd carry a spare extension cable so they could plug in the car.
I wouldn't even know where to plug in my car now.
That's one of those things we've lost. Like playing football this year.
Like a party Viking race we once were. Weak we are. Weak. How I hate us. Us with our lying comic books.
Okay. Your mama's so fat she had to have gastric bypass surgery.
I guess. I apologize.
It's been a while, I know.
And
I apologize for that wholeheartedly. It's been very, very busy. I haven't had the time to really sit back and relax and enjoy the ambiance of the diner. As a matter of fact, I hate to say it, I haven't been here since New Year's Eve. It was a grand time. We watched the ball drop on the small little black and white Crosley television bolted up in the corner of the diner. We had champagne, which was not so good because, we opened up one of the bottles and it just took somebody's eye out, frankly. Champagne bottles are dangerous things. I mean, I don't know how to tell you when they come with that little wire cage on top of it. Where else do you see a wire cage? At the zoo, where dangerous animals are kept. In an insane asylum where homicidal maniacs are stowed behind wire cages. If you're in the Soviet Union and you're having a trial for a guy who's murdered 67 prostitutes, where do you put him? You put him in a wire cage. So what do you get when you look at a champagne bottle? There's a wire cage. That tells you something. And what, of course, do most people do? Well, they immediately start to cinch it open. And then pop, off it goes. Wow, right in the head. It makes you wonder who exactly invented champagne. From what I understand, it wasn't a guy named Champagne. Champagne is a place. It was inadvertent, I think, that it was one of those things like vulcanization and penicillin, where somebody just made a mistake or left something going overnight and they came back and voila, champagne, or voila, vulcanized champagne that cures syphilis. That would be a French invention. But somebody must have done something with the bottle and set it aside, and then one day, you know, either the bottle exploded or the cork shot off. And I'm just stunned that nobody actually used champagne for military purposes. Nobody instantly thought of the military applications of champagne, of carbonation. Carbonation is a tremendous power. You would think that once they had discovered that these corks would fly off with great force and strike people in the head or the yarbles or wherever, that somebody would have said, we can turn this to our advantage and constructed gigantic, you know, Jeroboams, Nebuchadnezzars. Those are actual terms, incidentally, for bottle sizes. Full of powerful, powerful, state-of-the-art champagne. And they would roll those things up on creaking wooden carts and then give the command and, you know, unloose the corks and you bowl over 50 men with a good-sized cork. Wouldn't have the explosive power of a cannonball once it got there, but, you know, it's cork, so it's going to be cheaper. Or is it? Well, I don't know about that. Cork trees could be, that'd be very interesting. Somebody could, if there had, you know what? I'm sure they did. I'm sure that there was a champagne corps that actually probably used, I don't know, smaller shoulder-mounted versions of champagne rockets and took out their enemy, won battles, covered themselves with glory as well as a certain sweet, sticky foam that was not entirely attractive smelling the next day, and that the other side realized that if they torched the cork forests or introduced some sort of miscreant weevil that would bring the cork forest to its knees, they could eliminate this this fearsome weapon that the French had come up with. And that's why the French, frankly, excuse me, probably have never militarily dominated Europe as before. Their one experiment with the ultimate weapon, really, the ultimate French weapon, which would be the champagne gun, ended poorly for them. Probably, now that I think about it, because after the corks have gone off, what happens? Well, you've got the foam, and then you've got the bottle, and you've got to drink it because it's going to go flat, and there's nothing worse than flat champagne. So when Don, excuse me again. So when Don Ho sings about tiny bubbles, you know, it's 500 years from now, somebody will be singing a charming little ditty about, you know, Fat Man and Little Boy and the atomic weapons. And the whole fearsome history of that weapon will have been turned into a popular song about an intoxicating beverage. Yep, that all makes sense. Glad I went off on that track. That makes perfect sense. Yep, champagne rockets. Well, since I haven't been here in a while, I can't really see that anything's different. I see that all the Christmas decorations are down, of course. Came down on January 2nd. Very odd, this is the first year I almost miss Christmas in January. Usually you're just so damn sick and tired of it, but I could use a little Christmas right about now, and I don't know why. It may be just the brutality of winter this year. Oh, well. Let's see what's on the chalkboard menu by the door. Ooh. Sterno pudding. I love sterno pudding. I'll have some sterno pudding. Thank you. Yes, please. Oh, it's delish. No, it's not warmed with the sterno. It is sterno. It's got sterno in it. Some people don't like the, you know, petroleum-y naphtha aftertaste, but to me that's part of the charm. Warms you up, it does. Sticks to the ribs. Literally. I mean, you got to be careful. You get that stuff on your ribs out inside of your body, you better get a spatula and take it off, because otherwise it eats right through. Eats right through. Could be nasty. So, asbestos gloves and a steel spoon, but it'll warm you up. Let's see what's on the jukebox today, shall we? Don't know. Gosh, I hate to think of that. The fellow who stocks the jukebox has been coming by and changing out songs for the last 2 weeks, and I haven't heard any of them. Well, no, I'm sure he's up to date. All right, let's try it. Let's just go here at random. I'm going to put a hand over my eyes and just punch buttons and see what song comes up.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Well, same to you guys.
May this year be good to you with health, good luck, prosperity too.
What if I'm Hitler?
Happy New Year.
What if you're wishing Happy New Year to Hitler?
Happy New Year.
Think about these things. Hello, come back. Here they go. What the hell is this?
Out with the old year, in with the new, and a happy new year.
The Harlem Bongo Band?
Happy New Year, everybody.
The Mills Brothers go beatnik.
Get happy now while your hearts are lighter. Let everyone sing out.
Howdy-ho, man.
Happy New Year, everybody. We're really happy. The new year will be brighter. There isn't any doubt. There goes the old year with all our troubles. See him limping away. Here comes the new year, fresh as a bubble. Now everything's okay.
What a delusion. Hey. What a preposterous delusion. There goes the old year, taking away with it our troubles, our debt, our physical infirmities, our neuroses, our painful childhoods. It's all gone now because of an arbitrary calendrical decision.
Come on, get happy. Let's fill each glass with sunshine, and then we'll drink it down. Happy New Year, everybody.
tell.
The New Year's looking so fine. We're acting like a clown.
God almighty. You know, at least this is probably better than Auld Lang Syne. If there's ever a song that was the wrong thing to play at the peak of a party, it's Auld Lang Syne. For one thing, nobody knows what it means. I mean, should old acquaintances be forgotten, never brought to mind, da-da-da-da-da, and sing the Auld Lang Syne, which means old long sign, I think, is what it is, which is a kind of a wave, you know. I don't know what it means, but it's da 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 da. It's like a funeral march for clowns, and everybody's drunk and everybody's kissing and everybody's having a great time, and that's the song they play. Never figured that one out. Well, obviously the jukebox guy hasn't come around. Wonder if he watches to see if I'm here or not. Maybe he stalks me. Maybe he stays outside my house and waits for me to come out and go to the diner. Notices when I'm not here. Maybe he's stalking me. I wonder if stalkers have stalkers. It's entirely possible. I mean, a stalker would be drawn to the profession, so to speak. Want to learn from the best, catch up some tricks, or just share in the excitement. It would be a shock to a stalker if they had a stalker, wouldn't it? That might turn their head right around, convince them to find something better to do with their life. Oh, what am I talking about? Let's try something else here. Let's go to M1. Oh, God, no! Okay, what craptacular disco version of a well-known song is this one gonna be? Brace yourself. Dance, dance, Disco Lucy. Yes, here we are at the Studio 54 version of the Lucille Ball Show. It's Fred Mertz in a white suit, coke to the gills. It's Ethel selling Quaaludes. It's Ricky with a shirt down to the navel. He's gay. Who knew? You know, you could take this section of the song right here and plug it into any disco song ever written. It would fit. At some point in this filler, the female vocalist will come on and either inform us that this is Disco X, fill in the blank for X, or we will be commanded to dance or something like that. What's going to be this time, gals? Ah, okay, let's dance. There you go. Everybody, let's dance. That turns out to be the reason why we're all here on the floor. And Kiana, swirling around, looking like greased-up idiots. I'm not going back there. I'm not going to the 70s, man. I'm not going back there. You can't make me. Honest to God, I swear I've been living with a 60s and a 70s revival my entire life. I felt like I was living in a 60s revival in the 70s. Because everybody who was my elder, who was 30, was always lauding that decade as the greatest possible interval in human civilization. The music was good, the sex was good, the drugs were good, the politics were groovy, man. Everything was great. We drove out Johnson, we did rid of Nixon. Oh, God, I was tired of hearing it by the time my own decade came around. And when my own decade came around, what was it? It was the 70s. God help me. It was corduroy, it was brown, it was thick, it was shag, it was orange, it was foil wallpaper, it was disco, it was chicken-chested little sensitive songwriters pouring out their hearts to women who probably would leave them for a trucker or somebody with a pair. It was all of that stuff. And then there were little signs of light. There were hopeful things like the rise of progressive music as exemplified by Al Stewart. Al Stewart was the future. Al Stewart gave us hope because he came out with a 7-minute song they played on the radio and it had saxophone in it and poetical lyrics. She's like a watercolor running in the rain. Well, you know, don't leave your paintings out then. You, Al Stewart, keep your watercolors out of the rain. You, Richard Harris, Don't Put Your Cake Out in the Rain in MacArthur Park. There, we got the 60s and the 70s covered. Avoid rain. It's a deleterious effect on the lyrical enjoyment of your songs. Al Stewart wasn't that bad. The 70s did end nicely. There were hopes. There was Zippy the Pinhead. There was Saturday Night Live. But mostly there was disco. But disco was supplanted. Disco was pushed away by punk and new wave. And then yay, things were great. Unfortunately, we had a recession, and we had Ronald Reagan as the president. This is the worst thing that could have possibly befall you when you're 20, 22 years old. Ronald Reagan, man, he's like 104 years old, and he doesn't care if he lives anymore. He wants to destroy the world. That's why he got elected, because he wants to blow everybody up. He wants to start World War III. He's itching for it, man. He's just itching for it. Can't you see? So we were convinced that Ronald Reagan was going to kill everybody because, of course, that was the modus operandi of the whole guy's life. His modus vivendi was to start the nuclear holocaust, apparent in every single thing he did. Why? Who did he work for? GE. What does GE make? They make nuclear bombs. End of story. So what did we have then in the 80s? Well, we had new wave. Punk was dead. Disco was dead. We didn't have the cool stuff of the 80s yet that would come along in the Miami Vice era, and we had Ronald Reagan and a recession. And the recession, coupled with Reagan, would convince the average 20, 22-year-old that we were on the cusp of disaster and that it was going to be the Depression. The Depression. The Big D Depression, with brokers hurling themselves out of windows. Of course, it would be a problem in Fargo because, you know, they're on the second floor and they, you know, bounce off a car hood or something. But, you know, I was in Minneapolis by then, and the idea of seeing a rain of brokers hurling themselves out of plate glass windows was mortifying. And, you know, they'd fall on who? They would fall on the guys selling apples, okay? No, that wouldn't work, come to think of it, because first you have the panic where people throw themselves out, and then you have the economic crash, which results in the brokers selling apples. Unless, of course, we were living in a time that was so sped up, so modern, man, so hectic and hurly-purly-murly-whirly that, you know, the act of being thrown out of work and becoming an apple vendor was simultaneous with the crash of the market that drove people out the windows in droves. So, yeah, it was entirely possible. It was a new world, man. And it wouldn't last long because the Depression would culminate in what? War. War, of course. That's what always happens. Happened in the 30s. You know, Depression led directly to war, and it was going to happen in the 80s. We were sure of it. But it was going to be different this time. Somehow the Soviets would do something stupid, like invade Western Europe. Like, guys, did you have to do that? Of all the things, did you have to? I mean, China, maybe. Nobody cares about it. Go invade China, invade North Korea, invade somebody up in Europe. Don't you know that's going to make Reagan crazy, man? So that's what we thought was going to happen. We even had a TV movie to prove it the day after. That's what it was like. That's what it was like growing up in the days before the economy turned around. And I have that awful feeling that people think we're on the cusp of that again. We're not. We're not. I'm looking around the diner right now, and I'm here to tell you that if this place... Well, I don't know what the diner looked like in 1977, but I can guess. Depends on the ownership, I suppose, but... A place like this in 1977 would have been threadbare and tumble down and frayed. The linoleum would have been scuffed and worn away. The seats would have been frayed. The people would have been frayed. The waitresses would have been frayed. Everything would have just had a sort of sad end-of-the-road decline and fall of American civilization. Lean back, toke up, and enjoy the ride feel to it. Not today. We got over that, and it's preposterous to think that people think we're going to go there again. Not as long as there are people like me, people who lived under the rule of the boomers for most of their lives and then struggled out to find their own place in the sun with our stubbled chins and our pastel clothes and our shoes without sneakers and our alligators as pets in our houseboats. Okay, well, not all of us. But those of us who remember the 80s are determined not to go back to the 70s. So when we talk about gas lines and stagflation and the end of the economy and the cratering of everything and the decline of American influence. No! Been there! This isn't that. And I don't want to have it happen again, so I will do everything in my power, which will probably consist entirely of ranting long and loud here at the diner. And I noticed that people seem to have moved away. Sorry! A little too much coffee. Let's hit the jukebox, shall we? Let's see what we have here at C1. It's Betty Boop in Bosco Does Dallas. No. one. It's odd. This guy over there crying. Over the booth. Hold on a second. I'm going to go see if he's okay.
This is Rudy Valley again. Yeah? Stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana. A song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Well, get to it!
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done.
But now Brother, there is a new paradigm.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry here. I was talking to that guy who was crying. He'd open up his bank statement. Why his mutual fund investment statement. Guy made some bad investments. What can I say? Put everything in these hedge funds that did nothing but repackage subprime loans. And it's wiped out. Well, that's going to happen. But, you know, it's not the end of the economy. Oh, God. For God's sakes. He's trying to jump out the window. Here.
We're on the ground.
Hold on. I'm going to have to forcibly restrain him. I'll be back. Take it away, Rudy Valley.
Now, stop that. The window's only... It's cold out there.
Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Okay, this guy is just preposterously despondent, so I'm going to try to talk him out of his funk here. This would be a good time to break for a word from our sponsor. It's Amalgamated Apples, coming soon to a corner near you. No, I'm sure it's somebody else. Be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. I figured that you're the Muriel, the God-smoking kind, so let me get right to the point. You're right in style when you're in Muriel's company. Join the Muriel Miles crowd. Pick one up and smoke it sometime.
So to speak. He seems a little better now. I told him that, you know, he may be broke, but life goes on. As in the immortal words of Celine Dion, your heart will go on. Even if you do manage to, kill yourself tonight, chances are they'll find a recipient for your heart. Unless you really jump off something high, because then you're just ruining it for everyone. I mean, then you're goo, you know, and they can't transplant goo, so, you know, think of other people. Anyway, that's what I told him. It seemed to buck him up a little. All right, well, let's play maybe one more. Oh my God. He's gone over to the cash register. He's got a knife. He's holding it at the cashier. It's a table knife, too. It's not going to do anything. He's demanding money. This is just like the 70s all over again. People driven to desperation by economic circumstances. No, we're not going to go there. I've got to stop this. Well, I forgot. I happen to be one of those lucky people in Minnesota who has a concealed champagne carry permit. Hold on. Get it out. Undo the wire cage. Yes! Knocked the knife right out of his hands. No, I wouldn't have shot him in the head, for heaven's sakes. I've seen enough westerns to know that when you want to subdue a bad guy, you shoot the weapon out of his hand.
Yes, that was a good shot. And could somebody please subdue him? I can't do everything here, for heaven's sakes.
Well, that's going to do it for today, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been The Diner for Friday, January 18th, 2008. I'll see you down the road. And remember, only you can prevent the 70s.